William and the Monster. William was making his way to the lake in the grounds of the hall. It was large and deep and neglected, overhung by trees and spanned by a decrepit stone bridge. A discussion on the subject of Loch Ness had inspired in William an insatiable desire to capture a prehistoric monster and possibly tame it. He decided to give himself no rest till he had found it. It happened to be dusk. The shadows of the trees lay black over the water at the further bank. The wind ruffled the surface of the lake, moving one particular black shadow to and fro. And then William knew beyond doubt that he had seen a prehistoric monster. He assembled his outlaws the next day.
"I've seen it," he said, "a great black thing moving on the top of the water. I bet it had just come up to breathe. Well, now we know it's there, we've got to get it."
Next day, they began the capture of their new pet. The lake was generally deserted. This morning, however, they found the bridge occupied. William's brother Robert was there, leaning over the parapet with a picturesque maiden in a fetching spring outfit. Robert confronted the four outlaws sternly. William carried a rope with which to secure the monster and lead it to the old barn. Henry had brought his fishing net. Douglas carried a packet of ants' eggs and a mutton bone as bait. Ginger carried a stick. Thus armed, they stood on the bridge. The picturesque maiden was staying at the hall, and Robert was now a frequent visitor there. She had strained her foot, slightly, at tennis yesterday, and had been ordered not to walk today. And so, being of a romantic turn of mind, she had chosen to have her deck chair put on the bridge that spanned the lake. Robert had just been on the point of telling her that she was the only girl he'd ever loved when this wretched kid and his gang turned up.
"What are you doing here?"
he said sternly.
"Nothing," said William promptly. "What are you?"
"Mind your own business. I've been invited here, for one thing, and you haven't. You're trespassing. Go away at once."
The outlaws reluctantly withdrew. Melissa turned her limpid eyes upon Robert.
"What horrid little boys."
"Yes, aren't they?" agreed Robert. One of them is a kind of connection of mine."
"Oh, well," she said, "one simply can't help one's relations. Anyway, let's go on talking about... what were we talking about?"
"You," said Robert simply.
"Oh, yes. You were saying that you'd never met anyone before with hair the colour of mine. Do go on about it."
But somehow Robert couldn't. The spell was broken. He had an uneasy suspicion that William and his outlaws were even now watching him from the bushes by the lake and planning some way of ousting him from the spot where they obviously had meant to spend the morning.
"I say, it's a bit chilly here, don't you think?" he said. "Shall we go somewhere else?"
Melissa turned her violet blue eyes upon him.
"If you're tired of staying here with me, why don't you say so straight out and have done with it?"
"Oh, no, I'm not, indeed, I'm not. You know what you mean to me. I'd hate you to get cold. You seem to change so suddenly," said Melissa. "Talking about my hair one minute, and the next trying to get away from me." No, I'm not. You must know what you mean to me."
"How must I know what I mean to you?" snapped Melissa. "All I know is that just when I thought we'd got a lot in common with us both liking this beautiful romantic spot, you show me we haven't by wanting to go away from it."
Robert worked very hard for the next half hour, and by the end of it he had partially appeased the lady and got back to the colour of her hair. Meantime, the outlaws were holding a meeting in the old barn.
"It was jolly rotten luck them being there," William was saying. "We'll just have to go this afternoon."
But to the disgust of the outlaws, they were there again.
"I really love beauty,"
Melissa explained to Robert.
"I'm going to sit here and enjoy the beauty of this wonderful view all afternoon."
Of course, breathed Robert. A movement in the bushes round the lake had arrested his attention, but he came to the conclusion that it was only a breeze. Melissa lowered her voice.
"Do you know, I felt as soon as I saw this place that there was something psychic about it. And there is. I found out just before lunch. You aren't psychic, are you, Robert?
No, said Robert, absently.
What a pity. I somehow thought we had so much more in common than we're turning out to have.
Yes, I am psychic, Robert hastily informed her, but his eyes were still anxiously scanning the banks of the lake.
You felt that this lake was psychic as soon as you saw it, did you?
Melissa was saying.
Yes, said Robert. Well, listen, she went on. One of the maids told me this just before lunch. She said the bridge was haunted, and that one night in the year, I've forgotten which, if you look out of that window just an hour after sunset, you see a man in a cloak and a broad-brimmed hat, a period costume, you know, crossing the bridge. And just when he gets the middle, he lifts his hat off, and you see the face of the man you're going to marry. Isn't it terribly romantic?
A sudden idea came into Robert's head. He possessed a long cloak and a broad-brimmed hat that he was going to wear in some theatricals next month. He could prove to her, once and for all, that fate had destined them for each other.
I know, he said. I heard that, too. And, curiously enough, tonight's the night when it's supposed to happen. Not really, she gasped.
Yes, he said. Yeah, I don't really believe it, of course, but I know that tonight is the night.
Robert, she said, I shall be at the window, and if there's anything to see, I shall see it.
The fact that Robert and Melissa still held the bridge all through the afternoon had not defeated the outlaws.
We'll just wait till it's too late for them to sit there any longer, said William, and then we'll go out and catch this monster. We'll have to think of a name to call it when we've got it tame.
Ginger suggested Prince. Douglas thought Nelson. Henry suggested Monny, a short for monster, and William modestly suggested calling it William after himself. The matter was still undecided when the outlaws had to return home for tea. Later, Robert took the conspiratorial cloak and hat from their bandbox. Fortunately, the hat was secured by elastic under his chin, and so there was no danger of it blowing off. He waited till exactly an hour after sunset, then started out for the hall. He made his way through the grounds and began slowly, impressively, to walk over the bridge. It was a moonless, starless night. Then an idea occurred to him. The parapet of the bridge was broad and flat. It would be quite easy to walk along it, and surely she would see him coming along the parapet. He would stand in the middle, take off his hat, and surely she would recognize him. He leapt lightly upon the parapet and began to walk along it. He imagined her watching him, outlined blackly against the sky. He came to the middle, raised a hand to take off his hat, tripped over his cloak, overbalanced, clawed the air wildly for a few seconds, then fell with a splash into the lake below. He struck out and, hampered though he was by both hat and cloak, began to swim towards the shore. It was at this point that the outlaws arrived on the scene. They had crept very cautiously to the edge of the lake, and then they all gasped. There, before their eyes, a great black creature was floundering in the water. Immediately they all plunged in to pull it out. Robert's soaked hat completely hid his face. His cloak clung tightly to his body, and he certainly presented the appearance of some strange seal-like monster sporting in the waves. Set upon by the four outlaws, he allowed himself to be dragged to the shore. He'd swallowed so much water he wasn't sure whether he was drowned or not. He couldn't see or speak or hear. He only knew that he was being pulled and pushed about in a very queer way. Perhaps it was a storm and the waves rising. If he was drowned, then of course he was drowned and it wasn't any good worrying about it. He hoped she'd know that he'd died for her, but probably she wouldn't. He couldn't do anything now but surrender himself to fate. Triumphantly, the outlaws pulled and pushed their catch ashore. William hastily tied the rope round its neck
and they all began to pull it along. "Come on, Prince," admonished Ginger. "Good old Nelson," cried Douglas. "Hi, money boy," shouted Henry. "William, William, William," called William. Robert, confused by the babel, past speech or understanding, and almost past movement, still managed to make an effort to ease the strain of being pulled along by assisting with his hands.
"It's walking," cried William excitedly. "It's got webbed feet," said Henry.
By this time, Robert had no doubt that he'd been drowned and was in hell, being dragged along by a large number of small but ferocious demons. Then one of the demons spoke.
"I say," it said, "it's a jolly fine monster."
There was something familiar about that voice that penetrated even to Robert's waterlogged faculties. He started back with a jerk that upset his captor's balance. Then he raised the flap of the hat that the outlaws had taken to be some sort of prehistoric face.
"Gosh," said the nearest demon, "it's Robert."
Good Lord, said the monster. "Ugh, it's William."
Then a window in the house was thrown up, and Melissa's silvery voice called out hysterically,
"What on earth's happened?"
Robert tried to explain, but he'd swallowed so much water that he could only gurgle. He turned to the outlaws, but they had suddenly and mysteriously vanished. Again he gurgled. Melissa leaned out of the window and stared through the darkness.
"You're wet," she called. "You're terribly wet."
Gurgled Robert through chattering teeth.
"You must go home and get dry."
Gurgled Robert. Half an hour later, after a hot bath, Robert went grimly to William's room. But William was sound asleep. His eyes, in fact, were screwed up tightly with the soundness of his sleep.
"All right," was Robert's parting shot. "You wait till tomorrow morning, that's all."
But next morning, William was not at breakfast. He was in the barn with the other outlaws.
"Well, I'm just about sick of prehistoric monsters," he was saying. "I feel I never want to see another as long as I live. Getting all wet like that and half killing ourselves catching it, all for nothing. They can stay in their ponds for the rest of their lives, for all I care. All of them."
The others agreed.
"Silly time for him to go swimming anyway," commented Ginger, "all dressed up in hats and things. I think he's mad."
"I know he is," said William.
Meantime, Robert was walking dejectedly down the road to the hall. He didn't know what he was going to say to Melissa. She'd seen him last night being ignominiously hauled out of the water and dragged along the ground by four small boys at the end of a rope. Desperately, he tried to think of some explanation. She was waiting for him on the bridge.
"My foot's much better now," she said, "but I wanted to meet you here because, well, you know, don't you?"
Yes, said Robert.
"Because it was here that I saw you perform that heroic deed. Oh, Robert, I feel so proud of you."
He blinked, speechless.
"Yes, Robert, it was dark, but not too dark for me to see what happened. I came to the window just in time to see you leap onto the parapet and dive in to rescue those boys. Oh, and Robert, when I saw you bringing all four of them safely to land, oh, I felt so proud of you. I was so afraid you'd take cold that I didn't keep you talking last night. But, oh, Robert, it was so heroic. Now, do tell me all about it."
Robert had hastily assumed an expression of bashful heroism.
"Oh, well," he said, with a modest little laugh, "you evidently saw all there was to be seen, and there's really nothing else to tell you.
So, let's talk about you."